Chapter 3. Arguments for God's Existence.
A professorship of theology should have no place in our institution. Thomas Jefferson.
Arguments for the existence of God have been codified for centuries by theologians and supplemented by others, including purveyors of misconceived common sense. Thomas Aquinas's proofs. The five proofs asserted by Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century don't prove anything and are easily, though I hesitate to say so given his eminence, exposed as vacuous. The first three are just different ways of saying the same thing, and they can be considered together. All involve an infinite regress. The answer to a question raises a prior question, and so on ad infinitum.
1. The unmoved mover. Nothing moves without a prior mover. This leads us to a regress from which the only escape is God. Something had to make the first move, and that something we call God. 2. The uncaused cause. Nothing is caused by itself. Every effect has a prior cause, and again we are pushed back into regress. This has to be terminated by a first cause, which we call God. 3. The cosmological argument. There must have been a time when no physical things existed, but since physical things exist now, there must have been something non-physical to bring them into existence, and that something we call God.
All three of these arguments rely upon the idea of a regress and invoke God to terminate it. They make the entirely unwarranted assumption that God himself is immune to the regress. Even if we allow the dubious luxury of arbitrarily conjuring up a terminator to an infinite regress and giving it a name, simply because we need one, there is absolutely no reason to endow that terminator with any of the properties normally ascribed to God: omnipotence, omniscience, goodness, creativity of design, to say nothing of such human attributes as listening to prayers, forgiving sins, and reading innermost thoughts. Incidentally, it has not escaped the notice of logicians that omniscience and omnipotence are mutually incompatible. If God is omniscient, he must already know how he is going to intervene to change the course of history using his omnipotence. But that means he can't change his mind about his intervention, which means he is not omnipotent. Karen Owens has captured this witty little paradox in equally engaging verse.
Can omniscient God, who knows the future, find the omnipotence to change his future mind?
To return to the infinite regress and the futility of invoking God to terminate it, it is more parsimonious to conjure up, say, a Big Bang singularity or some other physical concept as yet unknown. Calling it God is at best unhelpful and at worst perniciously misleading. Edward Lear's nonsense recipe for crumboblious cutlets invites us to
procure some strips of beef, and having cut them into the smallest possible pieces, proceed to cut them still smaller, 8 or perhaps 9 times.
Some regresses do reach a natural terminator. Scientists used to wonder what would happen if you could dissect, say, gold, into the smallest possible pieces. Why shouldn't you cut one of those pieces in half and produce an even smaller smidgen of gold? The regress in this case is decisively terminated by the atom. The smallest possible piece of gold is a nucleus consisting of exactly 79 protons and a slightly larger number of neutrons, attended by a swarm of 79 electrons. If you cut gold any further than the level of the single atom, whatever else you get, it is not gold. The atom provides a natural terminator to the crumboblious cutlets type of regress. It is by no means clear that God provides a natural terminator to the regresses of Aquinas. That's putting it mildly, as we shall see later. Let's move on down Aquinas's list.
4. The argument from degree. We notice that things in the world differ. There are degrees of, say, goodness or perfection. But we judge these degrees only by comparison with a maximum. Humans can be both good and bad, so the maximum goodness cannot rest in us. Therefore, there must be some other maximum to set the standard for perfection, and we call that maximum God.
That's an argument. You might as well say people vary in smelliness, but we can make the comparison only by reference to a perfect maximum of conceivable smelliness. Therefore, there must exist a preeminently peerless stinker,